The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. Ensuring long-term growth is the world's greatest salmon fishery through investment in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report, the final show for the 2016 season. It's Friday, July 22nd. I'm Dave Benninger.
And I'm Molly Dishner. Thanks for having us on board.
Coming up in the next hour, we'll get analysis and reaction from this season, which we know is certainly not over yet. But Fish and Game's Tracy Lingnow says it's been a good one.
I think it was another successful year, but also kind of a hand-wringing year. This would be the second year we've had a really late Quijack component, and I think the other thing, this large agashi, I think was a bit of a surprise for the guys.
We'll visit with the oldest skipper in the bay, check in on the happenings in Naknek, and get the lowdown on this year's enforcement. Plus, seafood market analyst Andy Wink helps break down the price and anticipated ex-vessel value, and the outlook ahead.
It's kind of set up to be a good situation for sockeye, for Bristol Bay sockeye, and hopefully we get the right product mix going into this year and coming to next year. You know, maybe even able to build on some of the demand that we've set up the last couple of years with these lower prices.
And Skipper Robert Hiano stopped in while he was changing oil yesterday to offer word from the fleet, which are the hardest voices to track down and sometimes the hardest to please.
Actually, pretty happy with 2016. I think there's a lot of reasons why we should be happy.
All that and more as we wrap up this year's fisheries report on KDLG. First, a note, a big giant caveat, that we know you are not all done fishing reds out there. However, there is not much more for us to offer from here. Fishing Game is closed on the weekends. Fishing is wide open. Transfer times are waived. Port Moeller stopped 10 days ago, and the daily run summary from ADF&G is done for now till they issue a final report probably at the first of next month. The coverage in our local news will continue next week, as it always does.
Also, it's been a privilege once again to bring you this report each night. This is the 40th one of the season. This year, we enjoyed hearing new voices, offering more analysis, and those popular letters from home. But much as many of you are ready to get off the boat and hang up your gear, it's about time we take a little breather here as well. Oh, and thanks for all that feedback. We appreciate it.
We'll run down today's numbers in a moment, but first, the big picture. 2016 looks like a good year. It was late, like 2015, but it did show. The harvest is already over the forecast and just about to catch last year's harvest during that much larger overall return. Nobody that we know of went on processor limits this year. The escapement goals have been reached, except yet in Togiak, and those rivers that have gone over the top end of their goals have only done so by a small amount. There was decent weather with no big storms. There were no big spills, fires, or vessels down. None of the Cape Greg walrus were harmed, and the Ugashik fleet didn't seem bothered by the changed boundary. Igushik had perhaps its best season ever. Ugashik had its best harvest since statehood, and the biggest total run since statehood. The Nushigak district harvest will be one of the highest on its record. Of course, not all went well. Naknek Quijack showed up again late, and while it might make its forecast, no doubt some effort will be lost due to the timing. A lot of Nushigak Coffee Point set netters did not have a very good season, and three young men died unexpectedly this summer in Bristol Bay. And the 75-cent base price, while up from last year, is still down from the $1.20 paid out in 2014.
All those stories summed up here. And what's your one-word description of this season?
Exciting.
Endurance. This season needed just the whole, our whole crew, basically, it was just endurance.
Fun.
Oh, exciting. It was fun for most of it until I got homesick. It was real fun.
Exacerbating?
Is that a word?
I think you got the word that you want.
Baited.
Like something was exacerbated, like made worse.
No. Exasperating. That's what I... Exhilarate? No, that's not what I meant.
I think you made a word up.
Stay with us this hour as we break down much of this. But first, Molly Dishner has the rundown of today's numbers.
Total run to Bristol Bay through Thursday, 46.9 million fish. A hair above Fish and Game's point estimate of 46.5. Thursday's harvest was 727,000, bringing the season total to 35.4 million, well above the 29.5 million harvest expected before the season started. And the towers that are still in counted 251,000 fish, for a season total of 11.4 million. Breaking down Thursday's catch and escapement by district. Ugashik, 153,000 fish caught Thursday, season total 6.3 million. That's nearly double the forecast harvest of 3.8 million. Escapement, 68,000, season total 1.4 million, also above the expected 1 million. The total Ugashik run so far, 7.8 million, compared to a forecast of almost 5. Igigik, Thursday's catch was 120,000, season total 8 million. That's a couple more than the 5.7 million expected out of that district. The count was 25,000, season total 1.7 million. Again, that's more than the 1.4 million escapement forecast. Total Igigik run, 9.7 million, more than the 7.4 million forecast. Naknek Kwijak, 376,000 fish caught Thursday, season total 12.7 million. That's close to the forecast of an 11.7 million fish harvest. The Naknek River count was 33,000, total 1.6 million, pretty close to the 1.4 million expected there. Kwijak count 88,000, total 4.2 million. It's well below the forecast of 6.3 million. The forecast for the total run to Naknek Kwijak District was 23.17. So far, just coming in at 18.6 million. Nooshigak, Thursday's catch 55,000, season total 7.8 million, right on target with the forecast of the same number. The Wood River counted 6,700 reds, season total 1.3 million, just a little bit more than the 1.25 million forecast. Igushik counted 23,000, season total 408,000. It's more than the 280,000 that was expected there. The Nooshigak River count is done, stands at 680,000, which is pretty close to the forecast. All in, the Nooshigak District total run comes in at 10.2 million, right about at its preseason forecast. Togiak, 22,000 on the books Thursday, season total 439 fish caught there so far, right about on the forecast. 6,000 counted, total 67,000, which is not at all at the 200,000 forecast so far. The total Togiak run right now, 507,000, supposed to come in at 660,000. That's the run summary for Bristol Bay.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible in part by Naknek Family Fisheries, 246-FISH, or on the web at naknekfish.com.
You're listening to the final Bristol Bay Fisheries Report for 2016 here on KDLG. I'm Dave Benninger, along with Molly Dishner, co-hosting this extended show today. While we've appreciated the near-daily participation of Travis Ellison, Paul Solomon, and Tim Sands on this show this year, today we'll turn to their boss's boss, Tracy Lingnow, who is the regional supervisor for the Central Region Commercial Fisheries. Tracy, good to speak with you, and thanks for coming on the program here.
Oh, you're very welcome.
So what's your reaction here as 2016? It's not wound down all the way, but it's certainly tapering down as far as the sockeye fishing goes. What's your initial reaction here?
Well, I think it was another successful year, but also kind of a hand-wringing year. This would be the second year we've had a really late Kwijak component. And I think the other thing that I don't want to say caught us off guard, because our staff do everything they can to stay up to speed and in the know, but this large Ugashik coming in, it's still coming in fairly strong, as I think it was a bit of a surprise for the guys.
As far as the other districts go, as we've pointed out here on this program, the goals, aside from Naknek Kwijak, have been met, or rather the escapement goals have all been reached and not really over exceeded. From the state's perspective, how do you view that? Where those escapement counts sort of sit, that they're right about where management wants them. What's your perspective on that?
Well, I think that just provides credit to the entire staff, both research and management staff, on the job that they do. They do a ton of number crunching in season. With all those numbers, it can kind of get confusing, certainly to someone like me who kind of pops in and looks at it once in a while. But these guys live these numbers every day, and it just points to incredible success, and that, you know, that we're able to take a huge harvest out of this thing. I think we're about at 35 million harvest, and yet we're meeting the escapement goals. And, you know, we'll keep our fingers crossed with Mother Nature, and in 3, 4, or 5 years from now, we'll have another really good run.
I think lessons get learned every year, surely, no matter what job you have here in the Bay during this busy 1 month. But last year, I think the lesson learned was Mother Nature was not necessarily to be questioned. And as the run looked to be a bit of a bust, it then just slammed in full speed ahead in 2015. I think that gave people a little bit of more patience this year, 2016. But from where you're at and from where your managers are at, any lessons yet to be taken away from this year?
I think you hit it on the head. We absolutely were, just like you noted, a little more patient. I think what we're going to have to look at is we've had two late years for a component of the Bay, and, you know, I think we're going to have to be a little more, well, I think it's going to provide some patience by the public too, that, you know, as an ex-manager said, they will come, and they definitely have, and I think we'll just have to kind of broaden your horizon a little bit. I mean, it's tough to do for an area manager to do that, because they've seen almost everything already. And so when you see something new like this, it actually kind of broadens that horizon a little bit, and that's what we'll be keeping an eye on in the future.
Also down the road, some of our state budget cuts are not only now, but are bound to impact some of the management tools more here in the future, whether it's accounting tower, whether it's increasing the cost recovery efforts that were met by industry rather than the cost recovery this year. What toll do you see the budget cuts taking on the management of Bristol Bay, and how important is it to get these industry partners or lobby to get the money back in, or what's your perspective here?
Well, I think it was an incredible how the different users stepped up to the plate this year, and kudos to those guys. You know, there's a number of them, and so I'm not going to try to mention them here, but just, you know, when the industry does that and they step up to the plate like this, that's clear an indication that they know how important these fisheries are, you know, to the area and to themselves, you know. And so that's a big deal. As far as budgets in the future, it's too early to tell. We won't be dealing with that until August, September. You know, we're not going to have an idea of what the governor's request is going to be. He may ask for some cuts, which, given the last couple of years, will be likely. I just don't know how big those cuts will be and how, if we are cut, we'll fill in those gaps. But yeah, kudos again to all the groups that kicked in this year. It sure helped us out.
How important are some of these things to management as a biologist when you see the possibility that a counting tower on a river might not count for a year and things like that? What's the long-term impact of those?
I think the long term is just losing a year or two or more, you know, almost more certainly for Togiak and Agusiuk, is the historical perspective. And if it every year was average, you know, that might not be that big of a deal. But when, you know, we've seen the run late 2 years in a row, it really makes those projects more critical, because what we've seen in the last 2 years may actually be the future. And if you don't have that information now and be able to compare that to the past, well, then that's certainly not going to be much help to our managers.
Well, let's leave it there. Tracy Lingnow, just want to say hats off to the Department of Fish and Game for, numbers-wise, what appears to be a very successful year, well-managed fishery here in Bristol Bay. And also thanks to you and all the staff who participate here on KDLG with our Bristol Bay Fisheries Report coverage. We couldn't do it without their help. So thanks to all of you, and thanks for coming on our final program.
Oh, you're welcome again, and kudos definitely to the area staff, because they're the ones they're the ground effort that make this happen and successful every year.
Baby, roll. Let's roll, baby, roll. heard that song on the radio on the drive down here on KDLG, so we thought we'd give it a try.
I wrote it!
That was a request for Graham. Thank you, Dancer.
Always good to hear the Mushroom Cowboys. They were playing last night at the Red Dog in Naknek as part of the Fishtival and Beargrass Art and Music Festival. Yesterday, we sent Hannah Colton over to the east side to check out the scene, talk with a few of you, and report back to us. She joins me now. Hannah, good morning. Where did we find you this fine Friday?
Good morning, Dave. I'm down on the beach here right next to the old Peter Pan buildings in Naknek.
And how's the weather and the scene there this morning?
You know, the rain and the wind let up a bit just now, so it's kind of calmer at the moment, but it still looks like it could rain any time. It's been pretty rainy this morning.
Okay, we'll ask you about Fishtival here in just a minute, but first we sent you over to the King Salmon Airport this morning to take a look. We know a lot of folks are probably going to be making their way out of town here shortly, even as the fishing action is still fairly decent for some. So what did you find at the airport this morning?
Yeah, so at the Pan Air desk there, the lady said they're sending 14 flights a day, and they're actually booked up, like no seats left until the 27th, so lots of people headed out. But when I asked people why they were leaving, no one said it was because there's no fish. Mostly, you know, people are just tired, they're kind of done. Or if people have smaller boats, the weather was just getting too rough and the forecast looked bad. So very busy at the airport there.
All right, starting from yesterday, what did you find around town? I understand you stopped by to talk to our friend Herc McDermott there at the Bristol Bay Port.
I ran into Herc actually at the bar, but he said, I think the way he put it was, the port has been firing on all cylinders this season. He says they have the biggest staff they've ever had, like more than 20 people, and he said it's actually shaping up to be maybe their biggest season ever.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing those numbers. We know the Bristol Bay Port always ranks very high on top seafood moving spots in the U.S., so we'll see what happens there. Big harvest this year. What else around town are you hearing?
So I stopped by at Hadfield's Bar. The bartender there and manager, Tanya Mahoy, you know, she's been seeing lots of fishermen coming in. She said it was really slow through July, but now this week, lots more business. And she said people are pretty happy. There's a lot of people who are a lot more upbeat this season.
With the price, everyone's been coming in, you know, satisfied what it seems so far. From last year in comparison, everyone was definitely upset with price and the amount of fish that they were catching and just the season in general. So it's definitely nice to see people a little bit more excited this year to go home with money in their pockets.
Okay, so that was Tanya Mahoy at Hadfield's. What else are you hearing around Naknek?
So some fishermen were pretty pleased, pretty happy about the season. There's a set netter I talked to at a graveyard, said he was super happy, but he said, you know, that's just, it could be anything. It just depends on where the fish are. Not everyone was so upbeat. There's still a lot of confusion and a lot of frustration about the price, even though it's up from last year. So some people are feeling cheated, I think. I heard from multiple people, you know, we hear that salmon sells for, you know, $15, $20 a pound in stores. They're like, so why can't we get a good price? There's this one permit holder from Oregon. He didn't want to use his name. He's been fishing for over a decade, I think, here. And he said the low price just doesn't make sense.
I mean, a dollar should be minimum. $1.50 would be ideal.
For a base price.
For a base price. Because, I mean, we're out there, we're grinding hard, we're working, we're going days without sleep sometimes. By the time you deliver, you turn around, you're going. So we're putting forth an effort, you know. We always want to, you know, bring forth like a quality product. So we're doing everything we can to bring that in. And I feel like for all the effort that we're doing, you know, that it's not being compensated correctly.
Still, that guy from Oregon, he said he's not done fishing yet. He's actually just waiting on some repairs, and he's going to go back out. He said last year around this time, around Fishtival, he left, and then he heard people caught like a whole another season's worth basically this next week. So he said he's going to stick around maybe even until August for sockeye.
That was certainly the case last year. I guess we'll wait and see what happens, you know, primarily in the Naknek-Quijac District this year. Well, let's ask you how Fishtival's going. It's a popular annual event there, and last year, on account of the late timing, I don't think they had great turnout, and a lot of folks were still out making money. So what are you finding this year? How was the music and the scene last night?
Right, lots of people out and about. I actually made it over to the Bristol Bay Borough School for a really cool presentation by three historians, John Branson, Bob King, of course, and Katie Ringsmith. All good presentations on canneries, so that was super interesting, actually. And then later, yeah, I made it over to the Red Dog Bar,
several local musicians playing and lots more on the way. Katrina Herring, she's a longtime driver for Redline Taxi. Of course, they're buzzing around. She says they've been going from 6 a.m. to 2 a.m. this week. Like, it's really picking up. She said there's definitely more people in town this year.
It landed on the perfect weekend. Everybody's going to be able to come out and celebrate and see everything that's going on. And it gives a lot more excitement to every one of the events. Like, the bands are excited that there are people here to play or to watch them play. And they're, you know, like, the events are going to be more packed. We're expecting a lot more volume to everything that is going on this year.
Okay, again, that was Katrina Herring, a longtime cab driver with Redline Taxi with a lowdown in Naknek. Hannah, what more is scheduled for this weekend there in Naknek?
You know, there's more music at all of the venues, all the bars every night, and I believe the parade is tomorrow. And there's a whole other host of stuff. I think you can find that pretty easy on the Bristol Bay Exchange Facebook page.
I'm sure you'll bring us more from that. Hannah Colton, speaking to us this morning from the beach right by the Peter Pan Cannery in Naknek. Hannah, thanks so much.
Thanks, Dave.
Support comes from Crowley. Fueling Alaska for more than 60 years, Crowley supports local fisheries onshore and off with a full range of commercial marine fuel products and Bristol Bay floater fueling services. More information at crowleyfuels.com.
From improperly identified gear to nets out just before or after an opening, this summer we noticed more violations on the trooper wires than last. Alaska Wildlife Trooper Sergeant Scott Quist joins to talk about those violations and enforcement efforts. Hi, Scott. Thanks for talking to me today.
Oh, you're welcome.
So how has the 2016 commercial fishery compared to 2015 and other years past in terms of violations?
Well, this year it seems that our violation numbers are up a little bit compared to last year, but not as bad as years past.
All right. Do you have any sense of why that might be?
Well, I think fishing was fairly competitive this year with lots of fishing time and lots of fish to be caught.
Were there any types of violations in particular that you saw more of?
We saw a fairly large number of closed waters cases, but also a lot of closed period cases this year, and I think that had something to do with a large number of openings and closures.
Some of the violations that stood out to us were like a 212-fathom net and a 33-foot boat. Are those sorts of things common?
Vessel violations are not very common anymore. That's an issue that was dealt with 15 or 20 years ago, and we don't see it very often. As for nets, you know, that's definitely a concern for us, and it's something that we get complaints about from fishermen. And this year we did find a few long nets, and it's something that we aggressively pursue. It's an unfair advantage when people use long nets.
When you do find those violations, how is it? Is it based on like the net size they bought, or is it based on a measurement, you know, while it's fishing or out of the water? How do you even figure that out?
Well, we use tools in the field like laser range finders, just troopers' observations. When a trooper's out in the field, out on the water all year long, you kind of get a feel for what a legal net looks like. But then, like any investigation, we do follow up, and ultimately all of the nets that we suspect are long are measured on the beach, on dry land with a tape measure.
Did you guys have extra officers in the bay this summer to help with enforcement?
As usual, we brought in many troopers from all over the state, from Southeast Alaska, Interior Alaska, all over to man the operation. We also brought one of our flagship patrol vessel Stimson in from Kodiak with a full staff.
So the Stimson, what does it do? What is its role in the fishery? And what does it do when it's not in Bristol Bay?
The patrol vessel Stimson is our flagship. It's in the bay. It's used as sort of a floating hotel. It houses troopers, and we deploy skiffs from it. The vessel is also used for response to emergencies. We've used the boat for all sorts of things, boat fires and sinking vessels, you name it. It's a great asset for us.
Were there very many of those fires or sinking vessels to be responded to this summer?
It was a fairly docile summer in that regard. We didn't have any vessel fires and no vessel sinkings that I'm aware of this year, unlike years past.
All right. Thanks so much for making time this morning.
My pleasure.
Support for KDLG comes from Integrated Marine Systems, helping Alaskan fishermen maximize the value of their salmon catch through advanced refrigerated seawater systems since 1989. For more information, Integrated Marine on the web at imspacific.com or 800-999-0765.
This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report, our last of the year here on KDLG. I'm Dave Benninger. Andy Wink is a seafood economist with the McDowell Group. He keeps a very close eye on all things salmon and has helped author market analysis reports for the Bristol Bay Fleet. I'm happy to have him back on this program. Andy, good to speak with you here. We talked to you before the season. Many of the drifters saw you at the RSDA meeting in Naknek. We are here at the tail end of the season, and we see the 75-cent base price. Let me just ask you for your reaction on that base price, and talk us through sort of the ex-vessel outlook as well.
Sure. Well, there's kind of good news and bad news to it. The good news is it's 50% higher than last year's base price. The bad news is it's still quite a bit lower than where we saw prices in 2012, 2013, 2014. But, you know, the harvest volume this year looks like it's going to be very large again. Looks like we're going to beat last year's harvest. So that's very different than what we saw in those years with much higher prices. And, you know, because we've got the 75-cent base price plus bonuses, probably will bump us up anywhere from 10 to 20 cents above that in terms of a final season average. I think we're probably looking at an above average year in terms of total excessive value. Just for some context, if you go back to 2010, the fisheries averaged roughly $150 million a year for both drifters and set netters in Bristol Bay for sockeye. And, you know, in 2014, it was almost $210 million. So obviously that was a really good year, but then it dropped down to $92 million last year in 2015. And this year, you know, given where the price is at and where the harvest is, looks like we're going to jump comfortably above that 150 average. So I think that's good news. You know, ideally we all like to see the price higher and see the resource worth more, but I think it's a pretty good jump considering, you know, what happened last year.
Right, right. Is there a way to put the 75 cents a pound base price into some historical context as well, perhaps adjusting for inflation?
You know, it's still certainly behind. I mean, it's well behind what we had seen the last few years. And if you want to go back even further, it's probably close to what we saw during the early 2000s, you know, in terms of inflation. Well, maybe not quite that, but maybe the kind of mid-2000s, early to mid-2000s. So, you know, it's still a low price, historically speaking, but the volume, you know, I think has made up for it. And it's kind of interesting, too, when you look at the harvest numbers and the forecast numbers around the bay. You know, the harvest has been spread around pretty well. It looks like just about all the systems are in line to beat their forecast. So I think that's good news that, you know, most of the fishermen, most areas probably had a pretty good season. And, you know, hopefully many of them are taking advantage of those bonuses to the best of their ability. And, you know, and realizing an even higher price than 75 cents.
Right. And that is what we're starting to hear as people come in, is that many people did have a pretty good season if they were able to find where the fish were, to, you know, like in the Nooshigak district, they were running shallow this year or something. But shifting away directly from price, what else can you tell us about the seafood, about the salmon markets at the moment? I know there's a couple of things that you keep an eye on, which is the supply on the world market, the strength of the dollar for trade purposes, and whatever's happening with some of the competition, like the farmed markets in Chile and Norway that we know have had some serious issues over the past year. What's the bigger picture outlook?
You know, the supply is something we're definitely going to be watching. We'll really be watching the sales of both frozen and canned products, you know, as we go into this off season and kind of transition into the wholesale sales season. You know, big Bristol Bay harvest, and, you know, can we get through all of that supply? ahead of next season so that we don't have an inventory problem. Just kind of my preliminary take is that I think we're in a better position, that the fishery and, you know, kind of our side of things is in a better position to have a large harvest this year because of what happened in Chile this spring. They had a big algae bloom that killed many, many fish, both Atlantic and farm coho. And so that's set up kind of a, you know, a gap in the market for supply. And, you know, sockeye, this larger harvest of sockeye can fill that. So hopefully we won't see, you know, any sort of inventory concerns from this large harvest going into next year. I mean, now, depending on how much was canned, that could change a little bit on the canned side. But, you know, it seems like demand has been okay here in the early going. And with, you know, less Atlantics and coho around, hopefully that can fill in. You know, one of the only sort of snags to that is we'll have to see how many of the medium sort of standard 4 to 6 sizes and large size fish that we get, because a lot of those large fish go to Europe where there's that gap. But the Japanese are definitely, they're hungry for those 2 to 4 sizes too, and those compete against farm coho over in Japan. And so I think it's kind of set up to be a good situation for sockeye, for Bristol Bay sockeye, and hopefully we get the right product mix going into this year and come into next year, you know, maybe even able to build on some of the demand that we've set up the last couple of years with these lower prices.
I can't help but hear a little bit of optimism where last year we just heard nothing but pessimism, both leading up to the season and afterwards.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I've said before is when you have higher prices, you know, demand starts to slack off, you start to lose consumers, and that kind of draws down your sort of demand savings account. But then when you have lower prices, buyers and retailers and everybody who uses this resource, they're making money on it. They're kind of looking to grow their business off of those lower prices. And so the next year when they come back, they're, you know, probably looking to buy more or expand those programs. And so, you know, that kind of adds to your demand account. You know, 2015 last year, it was kind of a bad situation with low prices, but it did add a lot of demand. And then with what happened in Chile and the yen getting a little bit stronger over the last, you know, year or so, that's kind of helped us out. So I think there is some optimism. It still could end up being a large harvest to sell through. But, you know, again, I think there's more demand out there this year.
Let's leave it there for today. Andy Wink, a senior seafood analyst with the McDowell Group, thanks for the analysis and helping break down some of the factors that come into play with the price that was offered, but also putting that in perspective of where it sits historically for us. Thanks so much, Andy, as always.
Thanks very much, Dave. Appreciate you having me.
Every summer in Bristol Bay affords the opportunity to meet new and interesting people. Just a few weeks ago, I got to cross paths with Howard Knutson from Anchorage, who, at 86 years old, happens to be the oldest actively fishing drift permit holder in the bay. Knutson is a man who says he does not quit, and in fact, he was delivering several bags of beautiful fish caught in Ugashik, where he likes to ply his trade. Knutson was given the unofficial but ceremonial credit for catching the 2 billionth Bristol Bay salmon.
Wow, it's just a great honor. It's a big surprise. And
Norm says you're the oldest guy fishing in the bay, the oldest permit holder anyway. Is that true?
That could be. I'm 86 years old.
86? Mm-hmm. So how long have you been fishing up here?
Well, in the bay, this is my 45th year.
You're not getting too old to keep coming out here, are you?
No, I don't think so.
By the way, Knutson flies a Cessna 185 to bring himself and his crew to the bay from Anchorage each summer. He skippers the Sea Hunter 2, and when I saw him mid-season wearing clean jeans and a black hoodie, hair combed and shaved, well, he looked a whole lot better than most of you. Graying of the fleet is not a term worth much to this old captain.
Maybe one of the reasons that I'm in the condition I am is because I don't quit. I believe in, you know, I'm not retired. I don't ever intend to retire. It's not something that I would look forward to.
Maybe the reason you look so great for 86 is you
eat a lot of salmon?
Probably. I have eaten a lot of salmon. I eat it raw, I eat it cooked, I eat it every which way.
He told me his best season was 1981 when he caught 264,000 pounds, and the best company he's fished for over the years was Norquest. Now he fishes for Silver Bay, which he says he is enjoying, and he aims for about 100,000 pounds a season because he's here in part just to enjoy himself. But the other reason he enjoys Silver Bay is quality, which has been Knutson's top priority over many decades.
When I built that boat in 1983, I installed an ice machine. However, it was cumbersome and pretty much in the way, and I had to take it off because it was interfering too much with fishing. Mm-hmm. This is before we had RSW.
Right.
So when RSW came along, in 1990, I installed RSW in my boat.
So you're right at the cutting edge of quality improvements,
right,
every time.
Huh? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you proud to see the improvements that have been made across
the
bay?
Oh, absolutely.
Why is that important to you?
Well, because I'm proud of our product, and I like fish. I want quality, so more people be buying fish. I predicted in 1980 to the Board of Fish that in 20 years we wouldn't be able to sell fish without refrigeration. I missed it by quite a few years, but it's here now.
Knutson does offer some advice for younger fishermen, which, by the way, is all of you. Number one is, he says, don't fight the line. He says it's dangerous, not fun, and not worth it. He also tells others, if they're honestly interested in fishing, to stick with it year after year and not try to game the low-value seasons.
I've seen all kinds of prices, sometimes too high for the market in this country. The price is always going to vary with foreign exchange being fluctuating, which is one of the big reasons we had low prices last year. This fishery is sustainable, and it'll be here for a long time. And a low price really shouldn't be a concern for the fishermen. If you're into fishing, you're not in it for a year. You're in it for many years, or maybe a lifetime. And the only thing that's static is change. And so we'll always have a fluctuation.
I asked Howard Knutson if there was anything he had hoped to see changed in this fishery that hasn't yet. He says he tried for decades to change the 32-foot restriction on the drift boats, saying that the larger boats would be safer and allow for better equipment to deliver better quality fish. Knutson says despite his earnest attempts at what he thinks is a common sense solution, it never overcame Bristol Bay's politics. He also says he hopes that the area never risks building the Pebble Mine that would threaten the renewable resource he has fished here for the last 45 years. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report on KDLG. We'll be back in a moment.
All salmon here. Commercial fishing started this year with herring, and it'll end with halibut. From time to time, we bring you updates on those other fish, which make a contribution of their own to Bristol Bay economies. Herring came early to Bristol Bay this year. Area management biologist Tim Sands says the fish showed up about 2 weeks earlier than ever before.
We got a report of herring on the grounds on like the 15th or so of April. We flew it on the 17th and documented threshold biomass and opened the fishery. And the previous earliest openings have been the 25th of April.
That caught everyone a little off guard, and the first harvest didn't come right away. It was on about April 19th.
The assets to prosecute the fishery weren't really in position yet. Nobody was expecting quite that early. and people had to get their boats there and equipment there to proceed. After that, it went fairly smoothly, and we harvested over 15,000 tons of the seine quota. Three-quarters of the seine quota was harvested. There wasn't much in the way of gillnet effort. We didn't expect that. They got there late as well, so the gillnet harvest was insignificant.
In total, 17 seiners and 3 gillnetters delivered to 4 processors, Icicle, Trident, Silver Bay, and North Pacific / Red Salmon. The smaller harvest brought a silver lining.
Pre-season, everybody was expecting $50 a ton price, and because of the lower harvest, they ended up paying $100 per ton. The fishery was more valuable than it had been in 2015 when they took more quota, and probably more value than it would have been if they'd taken the whole quota, just because the market reacted to the smaller harvest by paying a better price.
In total, the herring fishery was estimated to be worth about $1.5 million this year. Meanwhile, when the ice went out near Togiak, the federally managed yellowfin sole fishery opened up. Yellowfin sole is a flatfish. It's fairly thin, white, generally sold as Pacific sole. Quota in that fishery, like for other federally managed flatfish, is divvied up among the participants, so management and catches are generally pretty steady from year to year. It's caught all over the Bering Sea, but each spring, some comes from the so-called Bristol Bay Box near Togiak.
In the spring, kind of that late April, May, first week of June time period when the Togiak area is open, that's one of the cleanest, most pure yellowfin fishing periods, which is part of why there's so much participation that people see when they're out in the area. It's a lot of yellowfin and very little of anything else, the occasional cod and a little bit of halibut, not very much. Other areas and other times of year, you'll get, you know, a lot of cod, you'll get some crab bycatch, you'll get all the different flatfishes.
That was Ann Vanderhoven, the fisheries quota manager at Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation. BBEDC is one of several quota holders in the fishery. By mid-July, its vessels had caught about 2,000 metric tons of yellowfin, roughly half the group's quota this year. Once landed, the fish is transferred from fishing vessels to cargo ships and sent out, mostly to Asia, where it's hand filleted. Then much of it comes back to the U.S. for sales. Some goes on to Europe. Under a voluntary agreement between the trawl fleet and local fishermen, the Bristol Bay Box is just open from April to early June. Then fishing typically takes a break. By midsummer, catches resume farther out in the Bering Sea, but generally then it's being caught alongside other species, like rock sole.
The boats try to get home in time for Thanksgiving. Depending on how long fishing holds up or what bycatch is looking like, they may wrap up earlier, late October, early November, but typically until mid to late November.
While trawlers were catching yellowfin, local fishermen were hauling in halibut. That fishery also early this year. Aboard the Eagle II, William Johnson said it's how he's started his season for the past 25 years.
Put halibut in my freezer, get the bugs worked out of my boat, and make a little money.
By the end of May, the 2016 catch had already surpassed the 2015 haul of about 45,000 pounds worth roughly 200,000. So far, through July, 20 Bristol Bay halibut fishers have landed 75,647 pounds. Although effort dropped off when salmon fishing picked up, there's quota left to be caught, and halibut effort is supposed to resume once salmon ends. Johnson and other fishermen also reported more of another species alongside the halibut.
Way more cod. We can't sell them, we give them away, but because we catch so much halibut, we don't have time to clean them and bring them in, so we just toss them over.
There may not be a fishery for cod this summer, but under a rule change implemented this year, next summer there might be an easier way to keep that fish and sell them, if a market develops.
Hi, Bob King here for the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. Sold on chilling your fish but need to figure it all out? The BBEDC and RSDA can help with technical assistance on what works on your boat and financial assistance to make it affordable. A better quality fish gets a better price. Quality is where we're headed. Our future is chilling. For the Bristol Bay RSDA, I am Bob King. Good luck and good fishing.
For the last word on this last show of the season, I'm happy to be joined by Robert Hyano of Dillingham. I know skipper's the Lady Mindy and sat down here Thursday during an oil change. Good to have you back in our studios, Robert. Initial reaction to 2016 so far. I know you're not done, but initial reaction to 2016.
Well, it's good to be here, Dave. Thanks for the invite. Actually, pretty happy with 2016. You know, I think there's a lot of reasons why we should be happy. You know, no limits that I'm aware of this year, and the going home price is higher than last year, and strong run throughout all the districts in Bristol Bay, I guess. I don't really know what Togiak's doing, and the fleet, for the most part, was kind of evenly dispersed for the most part, except, you know, just the last week or two here, on they all kind of piled into the Nakni Kwijak, and I think that helped spreading the effort out for everybody.
It seems almost, it seems very unusual for so many things to be so decent. What's going on here? It's becoming a gentleman's fishery, or too easy of a game here, maybe.
I wouldn't call it that. I mean, you know, I spent the summer in Inushigak, and we were fishing those two tides a day. Not much time in between closures and openers. It was a grind, and my daughter tells me we spent over a month on the boat fishing. She says that's a new record for us, so without a break. So, no, I think in Inushigak here anyway, you know, we had an early start and it just kept on going, and which is good. I think you're right. You know, the ABA processors were able to take care of it, and let's hope they put it in the right product form.
We don't want to leave the other districts out, but speaking of the Inushigak, I hear it's been kind of an unusual year finding where the fish are at. What did you think?
Oh, it is. I really can't remember a year where the basically the run came up on the east side, tight to the east side, and in the shallow water, you know, and virtually nothing in the channels. And you could tell the whole fleet basically was over there on the east side. And that's the first time I could remember anything like that happening. You know, usually you have fish over there, but you're going to also have fish in the channels. So the reasons for that, not a clue. But
a jet boat year, I keep hearing.
Definitely jet boat shallow draft. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Made a big difference.
For those that had it.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Let me ask you about something else. You've kept a close eye, a firm hand on the way this fishery is regulated and managed over your career. I'm looking here at the numbers through Wednesday anyway. The preseason forecast is going to be met or beat, likely. The harvest is good. The escapements that were changed last year raised up a bit. The levels, they've all been met without too much overescapement. It looks like maybe one or two rivers might hit the top end. Seems like Fish and Game did their part this year. Do you see anything that needed to be fixed, tweaked, something for next year?
No, and you know, I just came in this morning, so I'm not privy to a lot of the information that's out there, but no, for the most part, you know, looking at how it was managed and escapement and harvest and whatnot, I think it was spot on, you know, and it looks like there's going to be a strong tail to the run, so, which is helpful.
We look at these numbers, the last couple of years have been pretty big, 14, 15. This year we'll probably hit past 50 million, I think, if it keeps going here. Do you think these numbers will continue, or are we bound to see a few years slip back into those 20 or 30 million size total runs?
Oh, yeah, I'd almost bet on it. I mean, this is, you know, runs like this are nice, but I don't think this is the norm at all. You know, you look at the history of the bay and, you know, up and down, and you have your cycles. And I think it's a good reflection on how the fishery's managed. And, you know, I've said this before, is virtually the spawning habitat is unchanged, and I think that's a big plus.
Tell me about the timing. It was late last year. It was so-called late this year. Are we looking at something that's now the norm?
That's a good question. I think that's an answer, question for the scientific people. I don't, definitely something's changing, you know, and I don't know if this is going to be the new norm or what it is, but
Herring caught you off guard early, and this one came again late. Is there some lesson to be learned as a fisherman that you just have to be, can't book yourself too tight? Or?
Well, you got to be ready, I guess.
75-cent base price. I think some folks might see their way close to a dollar with the chilling bonuses and postseason adjustments, perhaps, but at least 90 cents for many. What's your reaction to that?
like everybody else, you know, I think coming off a 50 cents going home price last year, it's great. 75 and 15 is what, 90?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big plus. Big plus. You know, I think like everybody else, there isn't money in the for the fishermen at 50 cents a pound.
Right. And when we had these post-season conversations last year with fishermen, there was almost a pessimism that was near depression about the ability to invest into this fishery for the younger folks and such. Do you see a better picture, a better outlook?
Well, it's going to be interesting because you're right. You know, I know of people that elected not to come.
Yeah.
Because of the 50 cents last year and not knowing what it was going to be this year. And I think it was finding crew members was more difficult this year. There was a lot of people looking for crew members. You know, you, as a boat owner, if there's no money in it at 50 cents, definitely not for a crew member either.
This is not a board cycle year here heading into the off season. There will obviously be some talk of changes and things, but what's on your mind now? You're not on the BBRSDA board any longer either, but you keep active in all the fish politics involved here in this bay, especially in this district. What's on your mind? What's on your agenda heading into the off season?
Well, I haven't given that much thought at all. You know, like I said, we just came in this morning, do some engine maintenance and whatnot, and we're going to head back out. So I haven't given much thought. But, you know, like in Anishinaabeg here, and I don't want to keep harping on it, but this is where I fished. You know, I think that the managers giving us more of a flood opening was a huge benefit. And I think we did that without creating an extensive line fishery. And I think it worked fairly well if you look at the harvest to escapement and things of that nature, you know. So, no, I think most of my time is going to be spent on trying to look at additional protections for the uplands and the waters and those uplands to protect the spawning habitat and whatnot, because I think that's going to be the thing that's going to come around and bite us, especially with the state's current financial situation. We need to be real careful there.
All right. Robert, what else before we let you get back to the Lady Mindy?
Well, I just wanted to mention your fishery reports that you put on the radio. I found them very informative. And I really liked the mix of people that you had in, you know, from Warner Lou to Michael Link and all the other managers in between. I think you mixed them up real well. More so this year in the past because, you know, most of us have GCI cell service here. And this year, for whatever reason, you know, there was no signals. You couldn't get any emails or anything like that downloaded. So a lot of the information we were getting through that system was not available to us. So your reporting was extremely helpful for us to keep track of what's happening, not only in Bristol Bay, but appreciated your information on the ARM fishery also.
Well, I had to softball that interview to get to that nice compliment that you paid us there.
No, it's extremely important.
Well, we appreciate that. No, yeah, we appreciate that, and we always appreciate the feedback, but happy to have Robert Hiano in the studio again for the kind of the last word on the fisheries report from the fleet side. Thanks so much, Robert. And whatever is left this season, I hope you enjoy this next week or two.
Yeah, well, when we go back out, it'll be more relaxing atmosphere. So thank you.
Perfect for an elderly gentleman like yourself.
Thanks.
Thanks, Robert. And that's it for today's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report, which is the last of our season here at KDLG.
We've enjoyed bringing you analysis of the run and stories from the bay, and always enjoy sharing what's happening where you're at. You can find all of our coverage from this fishery, including all 40 of these shows, at our website, kdlg.org. We know you have a ways more to go this season, and we'll continue to report all of the action in our local news again at its regular time starting Monday. I'm Molly Dishner.
And I'm Dave Benninger. Keep in touch, and we'll see you back here next year, Bristol Bay.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report was made possible in part by the Bristol Bay Fisheries Association, advocating for fishermen. More information at bristolbayfishermen.org.